Bleak House by Charles Dickens, dramatized in 8 episodes by Betty Davis, with Michael Bryant, Sarah Kestelman, and Brenda Blethyn as Esther Summerson. Part 7, Springing a Mine.
A great annual event has come round in the establishment of Mr. Matthew Bagnet, ex-artilleryman and present bassoon player. It is Mrs. Bagnet's birthday, and as usual on these occasions, Mr. Bagnet has gone forth to purchase a couple of fowls and returned in possession of the oldest inhabitants of any coop in Europe. On this day, Mrs. Bagnet is required to do nothing but sit at the table in her best dress and be waited upon. Now the repast is concluded, the plates are cleared away, and Mrs. Bagnet, who has been itching to intervene to prevent the burning of the dinner and the breaking of the dishes, heaves a sigh of relief and composes herself to greet a welcome and familiar guest, their old friend, George.
Half past four on the dot.
George keeps military time.
Indeed he does, Mrs. B. Indeed he does.
Come in, George. Come in. Happy returns to all.
Oh, George.
Good afternoon, my dears. Happy birthday, Mrs. Bagnet.
Thank you, George.
Oh, but what is it? What's wrong?
Wrong?
You're so white. Oh, you look so shocked.
I didn't know I looked white. I'm sorry. The truth is, a boy who was taken in at my place has died, and it rather knocked me over.
Oh, the poor creature.
I didn't mean to say anything about it. It's not birthday talk. You're so quick, you've got it out of me before I've even sat down.
You're right. The old girl's as quick as powder.
And what's more, she's the subject of the day. See here, I've brought you a little brooch along with me.
Oh!
Oh, it's a poor thing, but it's a keepsake.
Oh. Why? It's a wonder, George. Oh, it's the beautifulest thing that ever was seen.
Good, in my opinion.
It's so pretty that it seems too choice for me.
Oh, bosh, not my opinion.
100,000 thanks. Fasten it yourself, George, for good luck.
Right you are. Oh, I can't. My hands are shaking. What's come to me that I can bungle an easy job like that?
Let me. There. That. Now, I recommend a pipe for you, George. And if that don't bring you round, just cast an eye across at your present now and then. The two together might do it.
And here's your glass, George. It's time to drink the old girl's health. Now, are we all ready? Well then, George, Quebec, Malta, this is her birthday. Take a day's march and you won't find such another. Here's to her.
Here's to her.
And wishing yours. Why? There's a man.
What? George!
Why? It's Buckets.
Yes. I was coming down the street when I was stopping to look at the musical instruments in the shop window. A friend of mine's in need of a second-hand violoncello, and I saw the party enjoying themselves. I thought it was you in the corner, George. How goes the world with you? And with you, madam. And you, sir. Huh? And you, my pretty dears. No occasion to ask who your father and mother are. Never saw such a likeness in my life.
Sit down, sir, and take a glass.
Thank you. I won't say no. What might the ages of these two be, ma'am? I'd put them down at the figures of about 8 and 10.
You're very near.
Ah, generally am near. Being so fond of children. Look at them. Cheeks like peaches.
Oh.
Give us a kiss, my dears. Bless you. And what do you think about Father? Do you think he could recommend a second-hand violoncello of a good tone for Mr. Bucket's friend? My name's Bucket. Now, isn't that a funny name?
Yes!
There you are, sir.
Ah, your health, ma'am. Thank you for your hospitality.
Glad to welcome any friend of George's, particularly when he's so out of sorts. You must cheer him up, Mr. Bucket.
Is he out of sorts? Never heard of such a thing. What's the matter, George? You haven't anything on your mind, have you?
Nothing particular.
I should think not. And have these pets anything on their minds? Not they. But they'll be on the minds of the young fellas one of these days, no doubt.
Oh.
Exactly.
Have you any children, Mr. Bucket?
No, ma'am, I haven't. My wife and a lodger constitute my family. Mrs. Bucket's as fond of children as myself, mind. but worldly goods are divided unequally, and we must not repine. What a very nice back yard, ma'am.
Eh?
Any way out of that yard now?
No. No, there's no way out.
Ah, oh, no, I see there isn't. But what a very well-proportioned yard it is. How are your spirits now, George?
All right now.
That's it. Why should they ever have been otherwise? A man of your fine figure and constitution has no right to be out of sorts.
He's no right to be out of sorts today, sir. It's my old girl's birthday. That's what it is.
No. Well, ma'am, here's to your good health and many more birthdays. Oh. Though there's no need to wish that, I'm sure, to a young woman like you.
Oh, Mrs. B.
This sparkling stranger is such a new and agreeable feature of the evening that Mr. George, who showed no great pleasure at his entrance, begins to be rather proud of him. He is such a success that he is invited to attend Mrs. Bagnet's birthday celebration the following year and makes a memorandum of the date in a large black pocketbook. Naturally, he remembers his friend George, to whom he's indebted for so promising an acquaintance. He sticks to him closer than a brother, and finally departs arm in arm with him, having engaged to return the next day to inspect a suitable selection of second-hand violin cellos.
The pavement's narrow, Mr. Bucket. We'd do better to walk singly.
Half a minute, George. I should wish to have a word with you first.
In here.
Hey? In here. The dog and duck, they know me here.
I don't fancy another drink, Mr. Bucket.
No, George. No more do I. This way. This is a parlour, you know. It'll be private here.
Why should we be done?
There we are. Now, George, duty's duty and friendship is friendship. I never want the two to clash. I've endeavoured to make things pleasant tonight. But now you must consider yourself in custody.
Custody? What for?
Now, George, duty's one thing and conversation's another. It's my duty to warn you that any observation you make will be liable to be used against you. So be careful what you say. You don't happen to have heard of a murder?
Murder?
A murder in Lincoln's Inn Fields. Gentleman of the name of Tulkinghorn.
What?
He was shot late last night. I want you for that.
It's not possible. Mr. Tulkinghorn dead? And you suspect me?
It's certainly possible, because it's the case. The deed was done last night at 10 o'clock. You know where you were then and can prove it, no doubt.
Last night? Last night? Why, great heavens. I was there.
So I understand. Likewise, you've been very often there. You've been seen and you've been heard more than once in a wrangle with him. And it's possible he was heard to call you a threatening, murderous, dangerous fellow.
No, he wasn't. That wasn't
now,
me.
I want to do things pleasant. There's a reward of 100 guineas out, offered by Sir Leicester Dedlock, Baronet. You and I have always got along together, but I've got my duty to perform. And I might as well get that 100 guineas as anyone else. Do I call assistance, or will you come with me?
I'll come. Must I have those?
I'm sorry for the handcuffs, George, but it's a serious charge, so it's my duty. There. Comfortable? I have another pair.
They'll do.
This unlooked-for development is to have its effect on a certain comfortable lodging north of Oxford Street, where Mr. Jarndyce and his household have been installed for some weeks. A shadow, the first they have known, has fallen on the loving understanding between the two girls. Esther has been much away nursing Caddy Jellyby through an illness, and during this time, Ada, it seems, has drawn away from her.
Ada, now that Caddy is so improved, I think I should like to go and see Richard.
Yes, Esther, I'm sure it would make him very happy to see you.
Well, then shall we go together this morning? Ada?
You wish me to come with you?
Of course. Why, I hope you've not had any difference with Richard while I've been away.
No, none.
Have you heard any news of him?
Yes, I have heard news of him.
What is it? What's wrong?
Nothing's wrong. Shall we go then? I shall be ready in 10 minutes.
There was a quiet sorrow about her, a hidden regret. It had come into my head that perhaps she was a little grieved for me by what I told her about Bleak House, for I had at last brought myself to confide to her that I was to be its future mistress. Perhaps she thought, though I had abandoned all such thoughts, of what once was and was now all changed. It was a somber day, and drops of chill rain fell as we made our way to Simmons Inn.
Why, my dearest girls, come in, come in.
Richard, how are you?
Oh, well enough. If you'd called a little earlier, you'd have found Woodcourt here.
Mr. Woodcourt?
Yes. There never was such a good friend. This place brightens when he comes. I fear he's not as sanguine about the case as Vholes and I are, but then he's an outsider and doesn't understand much about it.
Oh, Richard, you look pale. Do you think this is a healthy place for you to live?
Why, it's dark and it isn't a cheerful place, I know, but it suits me. It's near the offices and near Vholes.
Perhaps a change from both.
Might do me good. I shouldn't wonder. But that can only come in one of two ways. Either the suit must be ended or the suitor. But it'll be the suit, my dear girl. Don't worry. We're doing very well. We're speeding along now. Ask Vholes.
Are you sure you're making progress?
Oh, Esther, I...
Are you, Richard?
I can't lie to you, Esther. I fluctuate a little, and that's the truth. Sometimes I hope, and sometimes I don't quite despair, but very nearly. I get so tired.
Richard, my darling Richard.
Don't leave me.
No, never. Esther, I'm not going home again.
Not? Do you mean never?
Never. I'm going to stay here with my dear husband.
You're married?
Yes.
Oh, but Ada... When?
2 months ago, when I came of age. So, you must leave without me, Esther dear. I shall never go back anymore.
Tell Esther how it was, dear.
My poor, poor girl.
Will you forgive me? Will Cousin John forgive me?
What is there for me to forgive? And to doubt your Cousin John's forgiveness is to do him a great wrong.
You see, all I had was Richard's, and when he wouldn't take it, what could I do but be his wife?
We couldn't speak to you, dear Dame Durden. You were so fully occupied. Besides, it wasn't a long-considered thing. We simply went out one morning and got married.
Then I was always thinking how to tell you and what to do for the best. Sometimes I thought you ought to know. And sometimes I thought you ought not to know it and keep it from my Cousin John. Oh, I've fretted very much. Oh,
I know. I saw that. Oh, I was so selfish, so foolish. I thought that. Oh, my dear precious, how glad I am that there's no longer a secret between us.
Oh, Esther, now I shall put on my wedding ring.
Hey, I never saw such a wife. I don't believe she loves her husband at all. Richard, take her and comfort her. And I give you notice that I shall always be coming backwards and forwards here until Simmons Inn is tired of the sight of me.
Esther, please, will you tell Cousin John?
Yes, of course I will.
So, it is done. They are married.
She asked me to ask for your forgiveness.
Oh, she has no need of it. Heaven bless her and her husband. But, oh, poor girl, poor Rick, poor Ada. Oh, well, well. Bleak House is thinning fast.
But its mistress remains. She'll do all she can to make it happy.
And she'll succeed, my love. Let's talk of other things. Caddy is fully restored to health now.
Fully restored.
Woodcourt is a fine doctor. It is sad that he doesn't prosper more.
Be repaid in gratitude by Caddy and Miss Flyde and so many others is to be rich indeed. Oh,
I wish it was. We would make him as rich as Croesus if we knew how. Would we not, little woman?
Perhaps it would spoil him, guardian. He might not want to work, and then he'd no longer be so useful.
True, but we could make him rich enough to live, I suppose. Rich enough to work with peace of mind. Rich enough to have his own happy home and his own household gods. And goddess, too, perhaps?
That is quite another thing. We must all agree to that.
To be sure. I have a great regard for Woodcourt. I have been sounding him about his plans. He seems half inclined to make another voyage.
Oh?
But well, that's like casting such a man away.
It might open a new world to him.
So it might. I doubt if he expects much of the old world. I have fancied sometimes that he has had a disappointment. A bitter
disappointment. But I dare say I'm mistaken.
The very next day, as we were going to breakfast, Mr. Woodcourt himself called upon us with the astounding news that a terrible murder had been committed, for which Mr. George had been apprehended. When he told us that the murdered man was Sir Leicester Dedlock's lawyer, my first thoughts were of my mother. She had long watched and distrusted this man, as he had watched and distrusted her. How appalling to hear of such a death, and be able to feel no pity. But soon I remembered Mr. George, and the terrible case he was in. My guardian and I accompanied Mr. Woodcourt to the prison directly.
George, they told me what had happened. I felt Mr. Jarndyce would wish to know.
Oh, George, my good friend. What can we do about this terrible mistake?
Oh, thank you, gentlemen. This takes a load off my mind. Now I know you believe in me, I don't so much care how it ends. Miss Summerson, this is an even rougher place than my gallery to receive a lady in. But there's a bench of sorts, if you'd care to sit down.
George.
Can we do anything for your comfort?
Oh, thank you, sir. But tobacco being against the rules, I can't say there's anything I need.
Perhaps you'll think of something by and by.
Perhaps. But a vagabond like me can get on well enough in a place like this, you know.
Well, then, your case. How does it stand?
Under remand at present until it's more complete. How it's to be made, so I can't see. But I dare say Bucket'll manage it somehow.
Oh, heaven save us, man. You talk of yourself as though you were somebody else.
Oh, forgive me, sir, but I don't see how an innocent man can make up his mind to this sort of thing any other way.
Oh, you must have a lawyer. We'll get you a good one.
No, thank you, sir. Very kind of you, but no lawyer.
Well, why not?
I don't take kindly to the breed. The deceased was a lawyer, and he had a pretty tight hold of me, and I don't like his trade the better for that. If I kept clear of his trade, I should have kept outside this place. But that's not what I mean. If I really had killed him, I should have got a lawyer as soon as I was apprehended, and he'd have said, my client reserves his defence, or something of the sort. A lawyer would be likely to believe me guilty, even though I'm innocent.
Oh, no.
And he'd tell me to keep my mouth shut and not to commit myself. He'd chop the evidence small and quibble and get me off, perhaps. But I don't care to be got off that way. I must come off clear and full or not at all. I'd rather be hanged in my own way.
Oh.
Well, that's all I've got
dear,
to say.
Dear, dear. George.
Come in, Matt, come in. Miss Summerson and gentlemen, this is an old comrade of mine, Matthew Bagnet, and this is his wife.
Oh, good afternoon, Miss. Sirs, good afternoon.
Real good friends of mine they are. It was at their house that I was taken.
With a second-hand violoncello of a good tone. For a friend that money was no object to.
Oh, Matt. You heard what I was saying to the lady and gentleman. Does it meet with your approval?
Tell him, I'll go.
Why, George, you ought to know it don't. What do you mean by picking and choosing? You won't be got off this way or that way. Stop a nonsense.
Oh, don't be severe with me, my misfortune, Mrs. Bagnet.
Bother your misfortune. I never heard a man talk such folly.
Oh, this is a very sensible woman. I hope you'll persuade him to have a lawyer, Mrs. Bagnet.
Persuade him, sir? Lord bless you, you don't know George. I've given up talking to him. But if you're not too headstrong to accept a bit of dinner, George, here it is.
I accept it with many thanks.
I'm surprised you don't want to starve in your own way, too.
Exactly.
We hope you'll think better of it, Mr. George, and we'll come again to see you as soon... What is it? Oh, you look startled.
Why, miss, it's curious, and yet it struck me at the time.
What did?
When I went to the dead man's staircase on the night of his murder, I saw a shape so like Miss Summerson go by that I had half a mind to speak to it.
Like me?
Yes. And then I saw it wasn't you, miss, yet it was somehow so like you. It came downstairs as I went up and crossed the window where the moon shone. It had a loose black mantle on it and a deep fringe. There's nothing to do with the present subject, of course, but Miss Summerson brought it to my mind.
Well, good day, Mr. George.
Good day.
Good day, sir. Thank you.
I think we'd better wait for Mrs. Bagnet to come out. I feel sure she had something she wished to say to us.
I had that feeling, too.
In any event, she seems a very good sort of woman. I'd welcome a chance to talk to her. Ah, and here she comes. Mrs. Bagnet, over here.
Oh, thank you, sir. I was wishful to speak to you, and I hoped as the young lady understood. He's in a bad way, I fear, sir.
Not if he's helped.
Oh, you know best, sir, but I'm uneasy for him. He's been so careless and said so much that he never meant, and Bucket is so deep.
Wanted a second-hand violin, shall I? So he said.
Yeah.
You could as soon move Dover Castle as you could move George, unless you had a new power to do it. But I think I have such a thing.
Oh, you're a jewel of a woman. Go on.
He usually says he's got no relations, but that's all bosh. He's told me a few things at odd times, and I know as he has got relations, and I know where they are.
Ah, good, good.
Matt, you take care of the children, and give me the umbrella.
Right.
I'm away to Lincolnshire.
Bless the woman. How is she going? What money has she got?
Oh, never you mind for me, sir. I'm a soldier's wife and accustomed to travelling my own way. I'm away to Lincolnshire to fetch the old lady.
What old lady?
George's mother.
George.
There's one for yourself, Matt. Oh. And three for the children.
Yes, but...
Goodbye.
Mr. Bagnet. Do you mean to let her go like that?
Can't help it. Whatever the old girl says, do it. She's colour sergeant of the Nonpareil Battalion, and there's not such another, but I never owned to it before her. Discipline must be maintained.
And so it comes about that very soon a chaise and pair clatters out of Lincolnshire, rattling its way towards London through the night and along the freezing, wintry roads. In one corner sits Mrs. Bagnet with her grey cloak and umbrella, and beside her, holding her hand, is Mrs. Rouncewell, for so many years housekeeper at Chesney Wold. For Mrs. Bagnet has found out George's mother. They arrive in London in the early morning and set out for the prison. Mrs. Bagnet, quite fresh and collected, and Mrs. Rouncewell managing to draw about her with her lavender-coloured dress much of the staid calmness which is its usual accompaniment. But her heart beats fast as the warder admits them to the prison cell.
George Rouncewell.
What?
Oh, my dear child, turn and look at me. Is it?
Oh, forgive me. Forgive me.
My dearest son, grown such a fine man. Where have you been these cruel years and years?
Mother, forgive me first of all, for I know my need of it.
Forgive you with all my heart and soul. You're my beloved son, George. If I had died without the happiness of this meeting, I'd have blessed you with my last breath as my dear son. My dearest son.
I've been an undutiful trouble to you. Oh, when I went away, I was a harum scarum, and I made believe that I cared for nobody and nobody cared for me. I wrote a line, as you know too well, to tell you I'd enlisted. Then I meant to write again when I was better off. Well, each year I put it off till I was better off, and so from year to year through a service of 10 years. And then I was growing older, and I asked myself, why should I ever write?
I don't find fault, child, but not to ease my mind. Not a word to your loving mother, who was growing older, too.
Heaven forgive me, but I thought there'd be small consolation in hearing from me.
Oh,
there were you, respected and esteemed. There was my brother, prosperous and famous. There was I, a roving, unsettled dragoon. What business had I to make myself known? I thought that when I left, you'd wept for me and prayed for me. But now the pain was over, and it was better to leave it so. I said to myself, George, you've made your bed, now lie on it.
My dear, dear son, I understood, I knew.
Well, I thought that was the best amends I could make, to lie upon that bed and die upon it.
George, you must have advice. We must get you away from this prison. We must find you the best lawyer in the land.
Don't be self-willed about it now, George. Think of your mother.
I will suffer so until you're released, my boy. Don't break my heart.
Oh, that's little enough to consent to.
Oh,
George. Tell me what to do, and I'll do it. Mrs. Bagnet, take my mother to Mr. Jarndyce and Miss Summerson. They'll help her.
We'll go there straight, shall we, Mrs. Rouncewell?
Not straight away, my dear. First, I must go to the townhouse, the family house. I have some business there that must be looked to directly.
Why, Mrs. Rouncewell, we did not expect you here. Do you wish to see Sir Leicester?
No. No, my lady. If I might speak to you.
But of course. Sit down and take your breath.
Oh, thank you.
What has brought you to town?
Oh, trouble, my lady. Sad trouble.
What's the matter?
My lady, I have found my son. My younger son, who went for a soldier so long ago. And he is in prison. Charged with the murder of which he's as innocent as I am. Accused of the murder of Mr. Tulkinghorn.
But why, Mrs. Rouncewell? Why have they accused him?
Lady Dedlock, my dear lady, my good lady, my kind lady, you must have a heart to forgive me, to feel for me. I was in this family before you were born. I'm devoted to it. But think of my son wrongfully accused.
I do not accuse him.
Oh, no, my lady, no. But others do, and he's in prison and in danger. Oh, Lady Dedlock, if you can say anything to help me clear him, say it.
I? How can
I? My lady, I came last night from Chesney Wold to find my son, and the step on the ghost walk was so constant I never heard the like. Night after night it echoed through the rooms. And last night, I got this letter.
Letter? What letter?
Here, my lady. Shh. I've not breathed a word of it. I don't believe what's written on it. I know it can't be true. But my son is in danger, and you must have a heart to pity me. If you know anything that is not known to others, if you have any reason to keep it in your own breast, oh, my dear lady, think of me. Conquer that reason and let it be known.
Am I to read this letter now?
No. When I am gone.
I know of nothing that I can do that can affect your son.
My lady, you may pity him more under a false accusation after reading that letter. Forgive me, my lady.
Lady Dedlock. Murderess.
A great crowd assembles in Lincoln's Inn Fields on the day of Mr. Tulkinghorn's funeral. Sir Leicester Dedlock attends the ceremony in person. Strictly speaking, there are only three other human followers, but the amount of inconsolable carriages is considerable. Quiet among the undertakers and the equipages, Mr. Bucket sits concealed. He has a keen eye for a crowd, as for everything. And as he sits, looking here and there, nothing escapes him.
Ah, there you are, my partner. There you are, Mrs. Bucket, on the steps of the deceased's house, and our lodger with you. I'm taking notice of you, Mrs. Bucket. I hope you're all right in your health, my dear.
Not another word does Mr. Bucket say, but sits with most attentive eyes until the sacked depository of noble secrets is brought down and the procession moves off. When all is over, he makes for Sir Leicester Dedlock's house, where he comes and goes as he likes these days.
Here's another letter for you, Mr. Bucket, come by post.
Ah, tell me, have there been any letters for Sir Leicester in the same hand?
No, Mr. Bucket, not one.
Not one, I see. Do you happen to carry a box?
I'm sorry, I don't take snuff.
Could you fetch me a pinch from somewhere? No matter what kind it is, I'm not particular as to the sort.
I'll get you some from downstairs.
Thank you.
The same hand. The same two words. Lady Dedlock.
Have you anything new to communicate, officer?
Not tonight, Sir Leicester Dedlock, Baronet.
Because my time is wholly at your disposal, and I am prepared to defray all charges. My mind is full of indignation at this diabolical occurrence, especially tonight, after the ordeal of carrying to the tomb the remains of a faithful, a devoted adherent.
Sir Leicester Dedlock, Baronet, between ourselves, I look upon the case as pretty well complete. It is a beautiful case, a beautiful case. And what little is wanting to complete it, I expect to be able to supply in a few hours.
I'm very glad to hear it.
When I say it is a beautiful case, I mean from my point of view. As considered from other points of view, such cases will always involve unpleasantness. Very strange things come to our knowledge in families. Even high families.
Very good, thank you.
What time tomorrow would suit you, sir, if I have anything to report?
All times are alike to me.
Thank you. Then I'll say good night, sir.
Good night, officer.
Ah, Mr. Bucket, would you care for another pinch of snuff? I could get you some from downstairs again.
Ah, no, not now, thank you. Why, you're a very tall man, aren't you? 6'2", I suppose.
Yeah, 6'3".
Are you now? But then you're broad in proportion and don't look it. You're not one of the weak-legged ones. Were you ever modelled?
No, can't say I was.
You ought to be, you know. A friend of mine, your hero one day, is a Royal Academy sculptor, would stand something handsome to make a drawing of your proportions for the marble. My lady's out, isn't she?
Out to dinner.
Goes out pretty well every day.
Yeah.
Not to be wondered at. Such a fine woman, so handsome and graceful and elegant. She's like a fresh lemon on a dinner table. Ornamental wherever she goes. Is she a good temper?
As good as you can expect.
Ah, little spirited, is she? Little capricious. Well, what can you expect when they're as handsome as that? Don't look quite healthy to me, though.
No, she suffers from headaches.
That's a pity. I'd recommend walking for headaches.
She tries that. Walks for 2 hours sometimes, even at night.
Really? Are you sure you're quite as much as 6'3"?
Not a doubt of it.
You're so well put together, I wouldn't have thought it. Walks by night, does she? Well, it's moonlight, though.
Of course.
I don't suppose you've much time for walking.
No, besides, I don't like it. I prefer carriage exercise.
To be sure. Now I think of it, she went walking the very night it happened.
Yes, to be sure she did. I let her into the garden myself.
And left her there. I saw you.
I didn't see you.
No, I was in a hurry. I was going to visit an old aunt of mine that lives in Chelsea. 90 years old, single woman, and got a little property. Yes, I chanced to be passing at the time. It wasn't 10, was it?
9:30.
So it was. And if I don't deceive myself, my lady was muffled in a loose black mantle with a deep fringe to it.
Oh, of course she was.
Of course she was.
I'm sorry to have kept you waiting, officer, but I am not well this morning. The agitation has been too much for me. I suffer from gout, you see.
I'm sorry to hear it, Sir Leicester Dedlock, Baronet. I'll take the liberty of telling you we can't be too private. May I turn the key in the door?
By all means.
I have now completed the case, sir, and collected proof against the person who did the crime.
The soldier?
No, sir. It wasn't the soldier.
Oh. Then have you taken the man into custody?
It was not a man. It was a woman.
Good heavens.
Now, Sir Leicester Dedlock, Baronet, it's my duty to prepare you for a shock. But you're a gentleman, sir, and a gentleman can bear a shock boldly and steadily.
What have you to tell me?
First, I must beg you not to trouble your mind as to anything having come to my knowledge. I know so much about so many people that a piece of information, more or less, don't signify a straw.
Thank you for your preparation. I hope it is not necessary, though I believe it to be well intended. Take a seat if you've no objection.
Thank you. Now, Lady Dedlock...
What?
Lady Dedlock is universally admired.
I would prefer her name to be omitted from this discussion.
So would I, but it is impossible.
Impossible?
Quite impossible. What I have to say is about her ladyship. She's the pivot it all turns on.
Officer, you know your duty. Do it, but be careful not to overstep it. My lady's name is not a name for common persons to trifle with.
Sir Leicester Dedlock, Baronet, I say what I must say and no more.
I hope it may prove so. Very well. Go on, sir.
Sir Leicester Dedlock, it is my duty to tell you that the deceased Mr. Tulkinghorn had long entertained suspicions of Lady Dedlock.
If he had dared to breathe them to me, sir, I would have killed him myself.
I knew from his own lips that he long ago suspected Lady Dedlock of having discovered, through the sight of some handwriting in your presence, Sir Leicester, the existence, in great poverty, of a certain person who had been her lover before you courted her, and who ought to have been her husband.
You, how dare!
Who ought to have been her husband, no doubt about it. That person died, and Lady Dedlock visited his wretched lodging and his wretched grave in the dress of her own maid. I know this because the deceased, Mr. Tulkinghorn, employed me in the matter. It's my belief that the deceased, Mr. Tulkinghorn, followed up these inquiries to the hour of his death, and that he and Lady Dedlock had bad blood between them upon the matter.
No! No!
Now, you put that to Lady Dedlock, Sir Leicester, from Inspector Bucket of the detective, and ask her if she didn't go down to his chambers with the intention of saying something further to him, dressed in a loose black mantle with a deep fringe.
One moment, officer. Please, a moment. Why did Mr. Tulkinghorn not communicate to me this thing?
Ask her ladyship to clear that up from Inspector Bucket of the detective. I think you'll find that the deceased intended to communicate the whole to you as soon as he considered it ripe, and further that he'd given her ladyship so to understand. Why, he might have been going to reveal it the very morning I examined his body. One moment, sir.
Ah, the unfortunate affair has come out. I thought it would. Best way to hush it up is to let in the person now wrangling with your footman. Would you mind sitting quiet while I reckon him up?
Officer, the best you can. The best you can.
Thank you, Sir Leicester. All right now, all right. Sir Leicester will see you. The gentleman is in here. Carry the chair in, if you don't mind. Thank you. That's all?
Yes, Mr. Bucket.
I'm Inspector Bucket of the detective. I am. Perhaps you know me. You wanted to see Sir Leicester. Well, now you do see him. And mind you, it ain't everyone as is admitted to that honour. Your name's Smallweed, old gentleman. I know it well.
And you've never heard any harm of it?
You don't happen to know why they killed the pig, do you?
No.
Why, they killed him on account of his having so much cheek. Don't you get in the same position. Now then, let's hear what it's all about.
I was the client and friend of Mr. Tulkinghorn. I did business with him, and he was useful to me. Crook, dead and gone, was my brother-in-law. I came into his property, and I went through his papers. There was a bundle of letters belonging to a dead lodger, as was hid away at the back of a shelf in the side of the cat's bed. Mr. Tulkinghorn wanted them and got them, but I'm a man of business, and I looked them over first.
Well?
They were letters from the lodger's sweetheart, and signed Honoria. That's not a common name. There's no lady in this house who signs Honoria, is there? And in the same hand? Oh, no. I don't think so. Oh, dear me, no.
When you're ready, you're less concerned, Sir Leicester, you know, and here the gentleman is.
Isn't he concerned yet, then? Not with Captain Hawdon? And is ever affectionate Honoria? Not with that child? I want to know where those letters are now. I handed them over to Mr. Tulkinghorn, not to anyone else.
He paid you for them?
I don't care. I want to know who's got them. And I want more inquiry into the murder. We know where the motive was. It wasn't George the Vagabond Dragoon.
I'm damned if I'm going to have my case spoiled or anticipated by any human being in creation. Do you think I don't know the right time to stretch out this hand and put it on the arm that fired the shot?
I didn't.
Don't you trouble your head about the murder. That's my affair. Now, about those letters. I've got them. What have you to say next? And don't open your mouth too wide, because you don't look too handsome when you do it.
I want £500.
No, you don't. You mean 50.
I mean 500.
I'm deputed by Sir Leicester Dedlock, Baronet, to consider your proposal, and I consider it unreasonable. 250 will be bad enough, and you better say 250.
No.
Well, I won't allude to conspiracy to extort money, because we're men of the world and we want to keep things pleasant. But I'm surprised you made such a noise in the hall. It was opposed to your interests.
I wanted to get in.
Of course. But for a gentleman with wits as sharp as yours, not to see that if he don't keep such a business as close as possible, it can't be worth a snag. Why, it's very curious. Your temper got to the better of you. That's what it is. Keep it under another time and you'll make money by it. I'll ring for them to carry you down.
When shall I hear more of this?
I'll have the pleasure of giving you a call tomorrow or the next day in relation to your proposal of 250.
500.
All right, nominally 500.
Sir?
Would you give a hand to carrying the old gentleman out? Sir. Thank you. Oh, and one other little matter.
Yes, Mr. Bucket.
Good. I wish you good day for the present, Mr. Smallweed, on behalf of myself and the gentlemen of the house. Sir Leicester, it's for you to consider whether to buy this up. I'm in favour of it being bought up myself, and I think it may be done pretty cheap. Well now, the party to be apprehended is in this house, and I'm about to take her into custody in your presence. Don't you say a word. Not yet. You'll see the whole case clear from first to last. I promise you, I'll see that this unfortunate family affair is kept quiet. Now, I'll just get out of sight behind the door. She's coming.
Oh, I ask your pardon, Sir Leicester. They tell me that no one is here.
Oh, this is my lodger. Sir Leicester has been for some weeks.
What does Sir Leicester care for that?
We shall see.
I came to this house with your wife. She left me. They tell me downstairs she is in here. What is this?
Mademoiselle, I'm taking you into custody on a charge of murder. I don't want to be rough.
Devil! Devil!
Let me give you some advice. The less you parley, the better. Sir Leicester, this intemperate foreigner took it into her head that she'd established a claim upon Mr. Tulkinghorn, deceased, for the help she gave him, though she was liberally paid for her time and trouble.
Lies! I refuse his money.
If you will parley, you must take the consequences. Whether she became my lodger with any intention of doing this deed and blinding me, I don't know. But give me your attention, Sir Leicester. If you ask me if I thought George the Soldier guilty, I tell you candidly, no. But there was enough against him to make it my duty to take him into custody. That night, at supper, my lodger, this young woman, overdid it. She made such a fuss about her respect for the lamented memory of the late Mr. Tulkinghorn that it flashed upon me that she might have done it. Now, Sir Leicester, my wife, Mrs. Bucket, is a woman in 50,000.
Where is she?
Never you mind for a minute. She's a woman in 50,000, as I was saying, and to put this young woman off the scent, I've never set foot in my own house since. And Mrs. Bucket has watched her day and night. I calculated she'd overdo it in a new direction, and she did. What does she go and do? Throws the murder on her ladyship. She's been sending letters like a shower of ladybirds. See this one? Lady Dedlock, murderess. Mrs. Bucket found the corresponding ink and paper. Mrs. Bucket watched the posting of every one of them.
Bucket, you are a devil.
Lady Dedlock was on the spot that night, and my foreign friend saw her, but that don't signify any more. Yesterday, after the funeral, this young woman proposed to my wife an outing in the country. They took tea there. Nearby was a piece of water. At tea, the prisoner got up to fetch her pocket handkerchief from the room where their wraps were. My wife told me this, and I had the piece of water dragged. And there was the pocket pistol.
Where is your false, treacherous wife?
Gone forward to the police office. You'll see her there, my dear.
I would like to tear her limb from limb.
Bless you, darling. I'm fully prepared for that. Put your arm through mine.
What?
And the other one. Two all told. There's a cab at the door.
You're very clever. But can you bring him back to life?
Not exactly.
Very droll. Can you make an honorable lady of her?
Don't be malicious.
Or a haughty gentleman of him. Look at him. My dear old man. I pity you. And I despise you.
It is impossible to describe how Mr. Bucket gets her out, but he does it in a way peculiar to himself, enfolding her like a cloud, as if he were a homely Jupiter and she the object of his affection. Sir Leicester, left alone, stays perfectly still for several minutes. Then he rises uncertainly to his feet and walks a few steps. He lifts his eyes and seems to stare at something. He extends his arms.
Honoria.
Lady Dedlock. Murderess.
The young man of the name of Guppy, Your Ladyship.
Let him come in.
May you go in? Your Ladyship, I know I'm not welcome, and there's no reason why I should be. But I hope when I explain you'll pardon the intrusion.
Then do so.
Thank you, Your Ladyship. I ought to say that Miss Summerson, whose image was once imprinted on my heart until erased by circumstances over which I had no control, informed me that she wished me to take no steps in any matter relating to her. Therefore, I never expected to have the honour of waiting on your ladyship again.
Yet you're here.
Your ladyship, it's no personal affair of mine that brings me here. If it weren't for my promise to Miss Summerson, I shouldn't have darkened these doors again. You may remember, your ladyship, the last time I was here, I ran up against a party very eminent in our profession, whose loss we all deplore. That party certainly applied himself to cutting against me in a way that I would call sharp practice. Until the loss we all deplore, I was gravelled, if you'll pardon the expression. But now I have reasons for some apprehension.
Apprehension?
Hmm.
Concerning what?
May I ask, has your ladyship had any strange visitors lately? As an elderly gentleman without the use of his legs?
No.
Well, I assure your ladyship that he's been received here. I saw him go in. It's my belief he's with Sir Leicester now.
But what do I have to do with that?
I came to put you on your guard. Look, there may be no occasion for it, but a friend of mine, Tony Jobling, now known as Weevil, tells me the letters I mentioned to your ladyship were not destroyed after all. The old gentleman referred to has got them, and I think he means to make money out of them. If such a thing is possible. Your ladyship knows best whether there's anything in it. I ask your ladyship's pardon. Good day.
She scarcely acknowledges his words as he bows uncertainly and leaves her. But now she knows what she must do. It is many hours before the door to the library is opened again by the 6'3" footman. He discovers Sir Leicester lying there, like a felled tree. The townhouse is plunged into commotion. They carry him upstairs and lay him down upon his bed. They try to restore him, but it is useless. He fell down, a handsome, stately gentleman. He lies on his bed, an old, old man. They search for her ladyship to tell her what has happened, but she is nowhere to be found. Not in her room, not in the library, not anywhere in the house. On her table there is an envelope addressed to Sir Leicester. That evening he opens his eyes at last and sees beside his bed his devoted housekeeper, Mrs. Rouncewell.
No, Sir Leicester. You're in London. You were taken ill this morning, and I happen to be here. I'm so thankful for it, so that I can attend to you. My lady went out before you were taken ill. She does not know of your illness.
where?
She left a letter. I have it. Shall I open it? There. Here, Celeste. Celeste. Send for Mr. Bucket. Yes, he's downstairs.
Celeste Dedlock, Baronet. I'm sorry to see you like this. Indeed, I am. Thank you.
If I am sought for or accused of his murder, believe that I am wholly innocent. Believe no other good of me, for I am innocent of nothing else that you have heard or will hear laid to my charge. He prepared me on that fatal night for his disclosure of my guilt to you. I followed him to make one last petition that he would not protract the dreadful suspense on which I have been racked by him. You do not know how long. I found his house dark and silent. I rang twice at his door, but there was no reply, and I came home. I have no home left. I will encumber you no more. May you forget the unworthy woman on whom you have wasted a most generous devotion, and who writes this last adieu.
Find her, yes. Full forgiveness, I understand. Sir Leicester Dedlock, Baronet, there's no time to be lost. The search must begin at once. But I'll find her. Never fear.
And true to his word, he sets out at once. He pauses only to search Lady Dedlock's rooms and comes away with nothing more significant than a handkerchief. A handkerchief marked Esther Summerson. If, as he folds it and puts it away, it had the enchanted power to bring before him the place where she found it, would he descry her there? On the waste, where the brick kilns are burning with a pale blue flame, where the straw roofs of the wretched huts are scattered to the wind, where the clay and water are hard frozen, traversing this lonely, blighted spot, there is a solitary figure with a sad world to itself. It is the figure of a woman, but it is miserably dressed, and no such clothes ever came through the hall and out of the great door of the Dedlock mansion.
In part 7 of Charles Dickens's Bleak House, dramatized in 8 episodes by Betty Davis, the part of Esther Summerson was played by Brenda Blethyn, and Mr. Jarndyce by Michael Bryant. Lady Dedlock, Sarah Kestelman. Sir Leicester Dedlock, Jack May. Inspector Bucket, Douglas Livingstone. Mr. Guppy, William Nye. Richard, Andrew Sear. Ada, Maggie Wilkinson. Grandfather Smallweed, Patrick Troughton. Trooper George, Michael Graham Cox. Mr. Bagnet, Stephen Thorne. Mrs. Bagnet, Pauline Letts. Alan Woodcourt, Adam Barham. Hortense, Stella Forge. Mrs. Rouncewell, Margot Boyd. With Rosalind Adams, David McAllister, and Patience Tomlinson. And Simon Cadell as Charles Dickens. The director was Jane Morgan.